Hey everybody, I'm Michael Monaco.
I'm Bobby Salison from the Hazmat Guys.
Welcome back to another amazing bonus episode where we're going to bring you one of our totally awesome sponsors.
Yeah, guys, so here at the Hazmat Guys, we're always striving to bring you the best that we can, and today we bring you the great people, or the great person, actually, from Cobalt Light Systems. We're going to get into the nitty-gritty about some of their emerging technology, things that are coming out, as well as about the company philosophy and all that type of stuff. So take a look at some of their products to help support the show, but now to the show, right, Mike?
Yes, absolutely. So we have on the line with us Eric from Cobalt. Eric, why don't you tell us a little bit about the company and yourself?
Oh, sure. So Cobalt Light Systems, we make Raman spectroscopy products that use kind of a special flavor of Raman spectroscopy called spatially offset Raman. And basically what spatially offset Raman spectroscopy allows us to do is scan through opaque containers. So where other Raman systems, you know, let you shoot through Ziploc bags and clear vials, we're able to shoot through things like, you know, 5-gallon buckets, gas cans, poly drums, and stuff like that.
Wow.
Through so a 5-gallon bucket. Holy.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. That's incredible. Like,
that's
so
thick.
If I can't even see what's inside the bucket, you can shoot through that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. So, again, you're a doctor, right?
Yeah, that's what they tell me.
Doctor.
No, I'm a real doctor.
A real doctor. That's awesome. And what you're talking about here is the new device called the Resolve, right, from Cobalt.
Yep.
All right. So
yeah, Resolve is the handheld version of, you know, it's kind of our handheld device that uses spatially offset Raman.
I'm sorry. So we're talking about all these new chemical detectors. Me and Mike have been talking about them on multiple different episodes. And, you know, it almost feels like they're, okay, how many different ways can they do the same thing? And all these new chemical detector meters, they all do different things. So what really sets the Cobalt Resolve different than everybody else? Like the Ahura and all these other things that are Raman technology.
Sure. So, you know, again, we use kind of it's a proprietary, we call it a variant of Raman spectroscopy. We call it spatially offset Raman. We call it SORS for short. And basically what that means is we move the laser beam around and we collect multiple scans. So our scan is a little bit longer, but because we're taking multiple scans. So the first scan, you know, is more of the container. The second scan is more of what's inside. And we use the contrast between those two measurements to actually tell you what's inside the container. So that's what makes us different kind of at our core. From a capability standpoint, it means that you're able to shoot through gas cans, bubble wrap mailers, you know, things like that, pill bottles, basically anything that's plastic, amber glass, or paper, we can shoot through that.
Okay, so then the container, it shoots the container and gets almost like a baseline, and then it shoots through the container and then omits the container in order to get what's behind it, pretty much, right?
It's kind of like that. It's a bit more in-depth than that. So really, the first scan that we take is a little bit of container, is mostly container, a little bit of what's inside. The second scan is, you know, it's a larger proportion of what's inside. And basically what we do is we have some algorithms that look for any contrast between those two measurements. And then, you know, we have some math that tells us what's inside it. So it's a little bit more than just scanning the container, scanning inside, and then subtracting. It's a bit more involved than that, but that's the gist of it.
That's pretty cool.
What are the limitations on the actual, like, container? I mean, obviously, I can't go through, like, a steel tank. So where's that kind of in between? Or can I go through a steel tank?
Sure. So limitations, metal is a no-go. We can't shoot through, like, a steel drum. You know, you can't shoot through, like, cinder block or anything like that. And corrugated cardboard also usually doesn't work. So the things that we do really, really well on, you know, you think your spare gas tank, spare gas can, 1-gallon, 2-gallon, 5-gallon gas cans, those usually work very, very well for us, up to something as thick as, you know, those blue 55-gallon poly drums. You know, like think the UPS bubble wrap mailers,
those are incredibly thick. Blue 55-gallon drum, those, yeah, that's... So would you be able to shoot through, like, a 250-gallon tote?
Those, I mean, are you talking about the ones that have the cages, the metal cages on them?
Yeah.
Those are actually thinner than the 55-gallon ones, so those are usually pretty easy.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. So, all right. So, this thing can shoot through. Is it like, are we using this? What my question is, who's using it? Like, do you see, I mean, obviously from being on the company, but I can see like aspects of like police using it for like narcotics. I can see fire departments using it for those, you know, like drums left on the side of the street. I can see industry using it for, hell, unmarked, you know, errant drums. I can see a lot of different things, and including even military. I can see that. Is this where the market you're seeing, where it's going? What are they saying about it?
Well, it's kind of interesting. It is a new product. So part of launching a new product when you have kind of a new capability like what you're talking about is seeing kind of where the market takes you. So you might imagine, you know, we're getting quite a bit of traction with organizations that shoot through packages. You know, we're seeing, you know, a lot of the drug agencies are also very interested in this because their guys aren't really trained in hazmat. So any opportunity that they have to keep something in the container is of huge value to them. You know, so they don't, you know, they don't need to call in the hazmat team if they suspect, you know, a fentanyl package or something like that. They're able just to keep it right in the container and just eliminate exposure altogether. You can shoot through pill bottles. So you might imagine that there's some border agencies that are really interested in, you know, making sure that there aren't people smuggling in stuff that's in mislabeled containers. Police departments, obviously hazmat teams. You know, this is riding on a few more than a few rigs in the U.S. Right now. And then, you know, military is also of major interest to them, like the EOD community. One of kind of the side effects of the way that we do our scan is we don't use a focused beam. So on the other Raman systems, you're really focusing all of the laser energy to a small spot so you can heat up the sample. Obviously, if you're dealing with something that's energetic, you don't want that. We use a defocused beam, so we're spreading out the laser energy over a much larger area. So we heat up the sample less, and we really reduce the risk of igniting, you know, things like very, very sensitive explosives, you know, the fulminates, the black powders, the azides, things like that. So we're getting a lot of traction there as well. Like you said, industry and academia, we're getting a lot of, you know, you might imagine a professor retires after, you know, 50 years and they got to clean out that person's lab. There's a lot of unlabeled amber bottles in there and the ability to shoot them. That's a huge advantage to them. They don't need to, you know, call up, you know, one of these remediation companies and pay the outrageous fees for that. So, you know, it's really pretty interesting. It's just to see who is showing interest on coming in on our lead forms. It's really, you know, the people we were expecting, of course, but then there's also some really, really interesting applications coming through as well.
Yeah, you know what? And I'm not going to say that we actually, this is alleged. This is an alleged thing that we used a unnamed manufacturer's meter, their focused beam, to light fireworks.
that was alleged. I very clearly remember doing that.
We almost got in trouble for it, but it does work very well. Those ones that are on the street, those ones that have those focused laser beams on them, have that potential of doing it. And I do know, I read in the books about this thing that it does not, which is, it's actually quite comforting, saying that, okay, if this does have an azide or something that's potentially a popper, that I'm not going to be blowing myself up. That's something good, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we would never tell a user to really let their guard down, of course. I mean, you still follow the safe SOPs, you know, use a delay timer and things like that, but it reduces the risk of that thing going pop. And anytime you can reduce the risk, that's a win-win all around.
So this thing doesn't have to just shoot samples in containers, right? Like, it can do a sample outside of a container?
So, I mean, it does everything. It does the point and shoot. It does the, you know, if you're shooting just through something clear, or if it's out in a pile on the table or in a vial or something like that. It does all of the, you know, the modes that the other ones do. It's we view the through barrier analysis as kind of like an added capability on top of, you know, the standard stuff that the other Ramans can do.
And it still does the whole like magical offset thing?
No, for those scans, you know, we don't need to do the spatial offset. So we would just collect that 0 point measurement and, you know, just do a single scan. So those scans actually take quite a bit less time. So if you're shooting something that's inside like a plastic drum, you know, that's about a minute and 10 seconds of scan time. But if you're just shooting something that's out on a table, you know, that's 10 seconds of scan time.
So let me ask you something, because this is something that just popped in my head. If I have a vapor,
mm-hmm.
like a drum that has a volatile liquid, meaning that it has, you know, a vapor in the headspace, and I put your meter pointed inside that hole, will it pick up, or does it need like a solid or a liquid in a vial in order to do that kind of stuff? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, you can always try it. It's probably not gonna work though. I mean, for ramen, you really
right. It basically comes down to the concentration, right?
Exactly. I mean, with any handheld ramen, you really need, you know, 5 to 10% of your sample to kind of get a signal. I mean, we can do quite a bit lower than that. Our system is very, very sensitive. We can do single percentages, no problem. But you know, you really do need. You know, it's not a vapor detector. I mean, you got to use a different tool for that.
And we're talking in generality. I mean, ramen is not a vapor detector.
Right.
These things are basically liquid and solid detectors.
Yep. You know, it's pretty interesting though. Right now, we're working with a couple government agencies, and just seeing kind of how low we can push it. Because basically, what we're able to do is, you know, if you just pick up a single grain of sugar, stick it on a piece of scotch tape, then stick that to the front of the instrument, we still get it. So, I mean, there's kind of this whole world in between bulk and trace. Technically, you know, you need micrograms, nanograms of material there, and then bulk can be anything from a single grain of sugar all the way up to, you know, you name it. But so we're doing a lot of work with some, you know, looking at that kind of that middle ground of, you know, less than bulk, more than technically trace. So, you know, we really are pushing the limits because this device is so much more sensitive than the other ones, you're really able to dig down pretty deep.
So when you're taking a measurement, like I'm thinking to myself, and now I've had this happen on other measurements where it says, hey, 99 hours, which if I'm on overtime, totally cool.
No,
okay with that. That's all right.
Yeah. So one of the things that we do, we use a different laser than some of the other systems. We use an 830 nanometer laser, and the reason why we do that is
that's a good one.
Is we use, you know, it really cuts down on the fluorescence, and it's the fluorescence that's causing those 90 hour, you know, measurement estimates. Our device times out at about 2 minutes of scan time, so we figure if you can't get your answer in 2 minutes, you probably shouldn't trust it anyway. So, you know.
Yeah. Right.
So what? What is the deal with the different nanometers? Like, why did you guys select the 860 instead of going with something
I mean,
in the thousands or something
trade-offs.
In the 700s?
When you change the laser wavelength, there's trade-offs. So as you increase the wavelength, so go, you know, from, you know, a 785 to an 830 or to, you know, 785 to 1064, you reduce the fluorescence. And that's the advantage that you have there. The trade-off is that there's less sensitivity. So, you know, there's a trade-off there. And there's also just from an engineering perspective, once you go out to those really, really long wavelengths, you have to use different detectors. So when we're using an 830-based system, we're still able to use a silicon detector, just like the 785 systems, but we do get that reduced fluorescence. So, you know, we like to kind of talk about it kind of being a nice sweet spot between sensitivity and fluorescence suppression.
So, I mean, so with that whole give and take thing, we're not going to have meters that go into like, oh yeah, well ours is 20,000. Oh, ours is 50,000.
I mean,
like, there's going to be
my wavelength is longer than your wavelength.
Give up so much in order to make that number that it's going to be defunct.
Yeah,
in the first
and
place, right?
And you got to remember, you still need a detector to read it. So, you know, in a previous life, you know, I worked for a company that, you know, we were using a different wavelength of laser, and we had to use a different detector, and there's challenges around that. But, you know, it's once you get much past 1064, there just aren't really any good detectors. So I don't foresee anyone being like, oh yeah, we're going to go to, you know, 15, whatever. I just don't see that happening in handheld ROM. And I just don't think that there's a huge advantage to doing it because there's just such a drop off in sensitivity.
Okay. Now for the big question, at least this is always my big question. And if it's too personal, you don't have to answer it, but how big is your library?
So no, we have big libraries. I mean, about 12,000 compounds. So, you know, all the chemical weapons, the explosives, the precursors, wow, narcotics, all the different flavors of fentanyl. And then you kind of get into the, you know, the industrial solvents and benign household chemicals and all that stuff. So we got about 12,000 compounds in the library.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Can I add stuff to the library? Like, so I've gotten in trouble a couple times for doing this, trying to get out of a run. But yeah, can I add on? Like, do you guys add on? How does that whole updating thing go?
As a company, we do add to the library, and we send those out as software updates. But users can also add to the library. If you got something weird, you can add it to the library. You can just collect a spectrum of it, and if you have the right administrator access, you know, so you don't get in trouble adding stuff to the library. Yeah, it takes about 15 seconds to add a compound to the library. And then, you know, from that point on, we tell you, if you do match against it, we do tell you that it's from, you know, a user library, not a cobalt library. So if there's another layer of scrutiny, you guys got to put on the measurement, you can do that.
So if I go and add something to my library, and this, I think this goes generally across all the meters, is that you know what? It seems common sense, but it's really not. If I'm going to add in a something into the library, it must be pure, right? You can't add something in, because if it's off by just a tick left or right, it screws up everything.
You can add trade chemicals to the library. I mean, we've done this with pesticides, right? I mean, there's different you know, formulations for certain pesticides. And you can definitely add them to the library's entries.
What I'm saying is, like, some people go, oh, well, this is hydrogen peroxide. But it's actually hydrogen peroxide in, like, dirt.
You know? You know, like, one of the things that we do is, you know, we do have that reach back service. And, you know, we do have technical experts that would be happy to look at that spectrum that you collected and kind of give you our opinion on whether or not it's library worthy. That's definitely something that we do.
What about this meter, like, you know, specifically the Resolve? Mm-hmm. What are the capabilities? We know it goes through opaque. We know it goes through thick. We know it goes through, it does offset, which is nice. It has a dispersed laser beam. What are the trade-offs and the capabilities? What would you say if you're pitching me, what are you saying to me?
Well, I mean, on the capability side, I think you nailed it. I mean, you know, when you look at our marketing documents, it's the ability to shoot through opaque containers, it's, you know, the reduced risk of explosives, and it's the reduced fluorescence compared to the 785 nanometer based lasers. From limitation standpoint, I mean, our device is bigger than some of the other ones. It's about 5 pounds, you know, and you know, if you're going to be carrying this thing 20 miles to a call, then it may not be the thing that you want to reach for first. But you know, I would say size and weight is a trade-off for us. It's about the size of a sheet of paper, and it's about 5 pounds.
I'm going to disagree with you on that trade-off as far as the size. I personally would rather have something that weighs a little bit more. You know, what are we talking? A pound or two? And yet can give me and provide me with better results than having to, you know, if I'm walking 20 miles downrange with a heavy meter, at least I'm going to hit what I'm going to hit, and I'm going to have good results, versus bringing 3 or 4 meters that are really small but have limited capabilities and limited libraries and things like that.
Yeah.
I think this whole concept of, hey, we need to get smaller is better. I think we've almost reached a limit where we're not providing good content in the meter, we're just providing a smaller meter. So I pat you guys on the back for being like, no, you know what? We're going to go with a slightly bigger meter, and it's going to be a little bit better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely comfortable with the trade-offs that we made. I mean, like you talked about, I think all a small subset of the user base where they may need to make a decision between carrying this and carrying a little extra water. And I think that for maybe those guys, you know, it might be something that you need to take into more consideration. But I think for most handheld ramen users out there, I mean, I think they'd rather have something that's a little bigger, a little bit heavier, but more capable.
Yeah. I like to be able to touch the buttons and read it. Yeah. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Our buttons are plenty big.
Those are really big points. Like, push. I can't tell you how absolutely irritating it is to me to have gloves on and push these little itty freaking buttons and look at little tiny screens.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, we made the buttons real big.
Okay, how does this machine work with, say, like a dirty sample? Because so often in times, you know, we go out there on a run and we're picking stuff off the street. It's been contaminated with, you know, dirt and hydrocarbons and crap on the road. So how does this thing deal with the dirty samples or the mixtures?
Sure. So with dirty samples, there's a couple of different things going on. The darkness to the sample generates fluorescence. So the fact that we use a longer wavelength laser helps us out there. So you're already starting with, you know, kind of an advantage there. The other thing that's really important is, you know, your spot size. So if you're scanning something that's a powder and it's in another powder, like say like sugar in dirt for an example, you know, if you're using a focused beam system that focuses down to a super, super tight point, if your laser is focused on, you know, a part of your sample that is, you know, not what you're looking for, you're not going to see it. Whereas if you use a larger spot, it's kind of like we're taking a picture of a larger area. So we have a little bit of a better chance to actually, you know, identify that compound. So yeah, I mean, for mixtures and dirty samples, like, you know, I've been in this industry a while now, and you know, I'm pretty happy with the results that we're putting on the screen.
That's, you know, that's always one of my my things is like every manufacturer, and I think I've said this before, every manufacturer comes in and they're like, "Hey, try it out on these samples," and they put out a case, and I'm like, "These are your ringers. These are the things you know are going to hit 100% of the time." I'm going to go in the back and I'm going to get, you know, the speedy dry that was in dirt, that fell out of the toilet,
absolutely.
You know, and that's the stuff. Because if it works there, it's going to work on the street.
Absolutely. So we had a funny scenario happen with one of those. They came out of the back. You know, our sales guy, we brought out, you know, our samples that everyone shows up to with a demo. He goes, "No, hold on, I'll be back." He comes back with this black bottle of stump killer. And he's like, "Shoot through this." Oh. And like, you know, when you think handheld ramen in black does just not go together. I'm like, "Oh, we'll try it. You know, well, it's probably not going to work, blah, blah, blah." And then it pops up as potassium nitrate. And I was just like, this is one of those where you just... it surprises you, you know, like those are just kind of those demo scenarios that surprise you. Another one was we were working at this other place.
We'll take
this guy
three.
Pulls out a pack of breath mints and he shoots through it and we get sorbitol. So these are like big, big mints. They're colored, thick, thick container, big mm-hmm. air gaps between the things. And it's kind of like, it's probably not going to work. And it pops up as the sorbitol. And it's just like, holy cow, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You know, another one goes, "Oh, you'll be able to tell the difference if it's sugar-free mints or mints with sugar, right?"
That is, we're pretty like, cool.
I don't know. At this point, you know, let's give it a whirl. And sure enough, pops up sugar. It's like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, it's, that's yeah, amazing. I mean, of course, it's not always successful, right? Some guys come out back and it's like, "Oh, here's this like weird, you know, the thing you use to wipe down the whiteboard," and you know, it's 99% water. So just ramen is not the right tool to actually, you know, measure what's inside that. So there's limitations. I mean, right. you kind of smile when it works better than you think it should, but you know, there's always times it's not going to work. There's no magic wand out there. Right. I mean, you guys understand that.
All right. So now let me change my hats. let me ask you from the point of view of like an administrator or a boss or a chief, if you guys are going to come out here and sell me one of these things, how are you going to train us? What is your policy on reach back, right? Which again, for those that are out there, reach back means that when I'm on an operation that I can send them what I got and they can, their experts back in the labs can look at these things and give me better detailed information off of what I pulled. And finally, what about support after I buy this thing? Like how, I don't want to be standing there with a meter that's garbage in 6 months. Are you guys going to help me fix it, find a new home for it, you know, tell me how to get through the menus? What's the policies on that?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, we view it, the sale is really just kind of the first part of it, right? There's the training. We have very, very skilled training partners. We work with, you know, a very top-notch training company. To do the new equipment training. We send someone from our factory to go help out as well. And really, we just, our training isn't button pushing. It's actually setting up scenario lanes and just running through them. You know, there's no better way to learn which buttons to push than when you're actually using the stuff in a realistic scenario. So that's how we train. After that, you know, like you asked about reach back, we got 24/7, 365 reach back, just like the other companies do. You know, when you're talking about, you know, if something goes wrong, you know, we have swap out units ready to go. I mean, we can pretty much get a unit anywhere in the U.S. overnighted from our facility outside of D.C. I mean, it's we thought about this. We understand that, you know, this is not a, you know, this isn't Dow Chemical. These are first responders that are responding to real live calls. We need to build up our entire company around that. So that's something, that's all stuff that we took into account when we're designing our service programs and technical support.
How's the reach back? I mean, like, what's your policy on that? Is it, because I hate those ones that are like, okay, step one of 74.
No.
I step mean, 312 of, I'm like, oh my no, God, this is never going to end.
Yeah.
Install proprietary program onto computer.
Right.
And of course.
Realistically, most reach back calls, it's because there's no signal. So if you're shooting water, for example, or table salt, those are things that don't have a Raman signature. And those are reach back calls that we can solve just like you snap a photo of it with your iPhone and just text it to us. That's something we can solve very, very quickly. If it turns out that it does have a signal and it's just not popping, on the meter, you just got to send us the file. You're able to dump the file to a thumb drive and just email it to us, and we kind of take it from there. We really, you know, if it's so complicated that people aren't going to use it, why even have it, right? So that's kind of, we try to absorb as much complexity as we can just to make it easy for the end user.
Well, that's a very smart idea. I've had the opportunity to use and play with this meter. I really do enjoy it. I really do love it. Where can somebody get their hands on it? Where can they try it out? Where can they, you know, run through the million samples they have in their own locker?
Yeah, so we, you know, we sell through Federal Resources. They're a really great sales and training organization. So you can reach out to them or you can reach out to us, www.cobaltlight.com. And they will probably put you in touch with me, for better or worse. They'll put you in touch with me, and we can figure out a time to get a salesperson out there, and either myself or one of our other subject matter experts that we have on staff. We kind of have the whole U.S. covered really, really nicely right now, and it's fun. It's fun to go out and demo this to you guys. It's always fun to see people be able to shoot stuff that they've never been able to shoot before.
All right, so this is all great information. We're wrapping up here. I really want everybody to be able to check out this meter, really get the ins and outs of it. If they wanted to go and check it out, where do they go? Who do they see?
Sure, so you can go to Resolve's website. It's www.cobaltlight.com/products/resolve. Or you can just give us a call. So our U.S. number is 703-251-4865. And for better or worse, they'll probably put you in touch with me, and we can kind of go from there.
That's so awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on the show and exposing us to this. This is amazing. Yeah. This is
Thanks for
stuff.
Having me. I appreciate it. It's always fun.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys. And take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484 and go to www.thehazmatguys.com and sign up for the newsletter.
We seriously look forward to your feedback about any of the information provided, and we also want to hear about interesting incidents that you were a part of. So you can send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com. And remember, any of the information that you share with us, if we put it on air, can always remain anonymous.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job. Get into the job.